Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for, what is it, Monday, August 10th, 2009. Hi, I'm Sam Minter.
Yes.
I've got Yvonne Vogel with me.
Hello.
Hello, Yvonne.
Yes, it is Monday, August 10th, GMT. Yes, it is.
Yes. By an hour and 35 minutes, which means for any of our listeners who are in the United States, or comparable time zones, it's actually still Sunday evening. But I know we've had occasional listeners from Europe, and for you, it actually is already Monday by the time we're recording. So
yes. So, okay. So, all right. So what's up, Sam? What's been going on?
Well, you know, I actually made a little bit of a list of things to talk about this time, but I will start out by saying, you know, honestly, for me, like, the time is getting more and more compressed because, We have about a month left until we're expecting our little addition to the family. And so, like, almost all of my spare time at this point is involved in one way or another getting ready for that. So, like, you know, I'm running around getting stuff, setting stuff up in the house, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, my amount of time thinking about other things has been relatively limited. And even, like, the few things I've done that haven't seemed like it, like, I revamped my blog last week, you know, are actually related. Because that, like, part of what I wanted to do there was re-enable my ability to post remotely from, like, my phone easily and with pictures and stuff. And I couldn't do that on the old system. So, you know, so everything is in one way or another related almost. So, you know, I've had a little bit of time, you know, on those kind of things. But I did make a list of things that were going on this last week. So I have stuff to actually talk about.
Okay. Like what, for example? What comes to the top of your agenda there?
Well, and I just turned. Okay, so the one thing that just this afternoon has been going on a little bit is some news about Attorney General Holder and his potential investigation of stuff that went on during the Bush administration. And one of the things is that the latest rumors coming out of that, and this ties in with, you know, things that we've heard for probably over the last month, but it seems like it's getting closer to actually happening, is that he may indeed appoint sort of a prosecutor to look into this stuff. However, what he's thinking about is limiting it very tightly to the people who went, the actual people on the ground who did interrogations that went beyond guidelines that were set up by the Bush administration. So, you know, the guidelines that the Bush administration set up are very controversial. They allow a lot of things that people think, that lots of people think should be illegal, you know, end of sentence, stop. But what we're talking about here is potentially the handful of on-the-ground people who actually went beyond even those guidelines and did things that those guidelines said were not allowed. And, you know, I've heard, you know, I've been reading back and forth on this. I'll tell you where my thoughts are, and it probably matches things I've said here before. I think this is completely the wrong direction. I think if these people probably should be prosecuted. Yes, I'm not one of the ones who believes that the on-the-ground people who believe they were following orders should not be prosecuted at all. I think that I agree with the precedent of Nuremberg. You know, if you do something, even if you think it was legal, even if you were under orders of your superiors, if it's clearly, if it's this kind of thing, you should be prosecuted anyway. Believing you were doing the right thing is not good enough. You have to have actually been following the law. But what they're doing here is they're basically saying they are not going to go after the superiors, which is the direct opposite of the kind of thing that often happens. Like, you know, if you're investigating, like, organized crime or something, you give the people at the bottom immunity to try to get at the bigwigs who gave them the order. You don't say, you know, I'm going to ignore all the bigwigs and go after, you know, the little people on the ground. That's just not the effective way of really getting at what happened and holding people accountable for their actions. And I think it's, if this indeed is limited to that degree, I agree with the people out there who are saying that it might be worse than not doing anything at all, because you're sort of you're scapegoating a couple people and you're ignoring the big issue.
Well, I would agree that that's the outcome of prosecuting a whole bunch of low-level people who maybe exceeded the guidelines sent out by some extent. You know, that seems to me, you know, not really what, you know, a great thing to do, to be quite honest with you. Even a reasonable thing to do. You know, I was hoping that if there were going to be investigations, that they would focus on whether or other violations, say, for example, like the, you know, but I'm not sure what violations I'm talking about either, because I'm not really sure, based on following the law, I'm talking about here being specifically, you know, going by the law, what things the administration did that were illegal. Did they, you know, there's been a lot of rumors and a lot of talking that, for example, that the administration exceeded their authority on wiretap, for example.
Right.
And of course,
to be fair, on all of these issues, the administration, of course, argues that they did not, and that everything they did was 100% legal.
Correct. So my question is, did they or not? And I'm like, you know, if they committed certainly legal acts that merit prosecution.
And that's the kind of thing that if there is a legitimate, there are many of these cases where you can make the argument in either way. You can say it looks like this is illegal, or, you know, the Bush administration obviously argues that it isn't. Hey, it sounds like a perfect thing to actually test in court. Let's bring it on.
Maybe not in court necessarily, but, you know, at least,
first you have to do the investigation of what the facts were. Then there's the interpretation of whether those facts constituted something that was a violation
illegal.
Of some law or another. And so I think, you know, the investigation to find out the facts should go on. You know, there's enough circumstantial information, let's just say, I don't want to use the word evidence, that lends you to think there's at least something there worth investigating. So let's get the investigation going and see where it leads. But I think you're crippling everything and making it almost pointless if you start out the investigation right from the beginning with the guideline that you're only going to look at the people who exceeded even what the Bush administration was legal. Because I think the real issue here that that everybody's sort of interested in one way or the other is not whether a handful of people went beyond the Bush guidelines. It's whether the Bush guidelines themselves were legal.
Exactly. I think that's right. And that's what I don't see right now happening. And, you know, if you're going to tell me that what they're going to do is what you just described, I find it an enormous waste of time.
Yeah. I think so. You know, we'll see how it plays out. And, you know, there's still these people saying, well, you know, Obama's playing the long game and he's going to do these investigations and we'll, because these are relatively non-controversial, because even the Bush people would say these people should be prosecuted, and then we'll see where it goes and if anything else comes up because of that, and then we'll move on from there. Maybe, but I don't know. I think I'd say, you know, throw an independent prosecutor at them, give them wide latitude, let them go wherever they want to go. And I know that can lead to trouble. You know, and those investigations can get really big and drag on for years and put a strain on the administration in general, because it, you know, as we've said before, sort of takes the air out of the room because discussion is about that rather than on policy initiatives. But I think this is, you know, if, and, you know, my personal belief is that this, a lot of the behavior in the Bush administration probably did violate various laws and treaties and guidelines from what I have heard in the past. Now, I could be wrong. I am obviously not a legal expert. But, you know, I think there's an area where even if the investigation led down a road and found a whole bunch of activities and found that they actually weren't illegal by the letter of the law, I think then that makes it time to change the law so that it would have been. But
that's right. I agree.
So anyway, that's all I had for that topic, unless you had more there.
No, not really. Okay, so
your turn.
My turn. Okay. Well, my turn, I guess. I had marked to talk about the I guess the town mobs. I mean, the town halls.
Ah, yes, on healthcare.
Yeah, you know, where apparently people tried to go out and try to talk about healthcare, and I guess it just degenerated into brawls.
Well, I mean, what we've seen here is apparently there are a number of conservative groups organizing to make sure that the people who support them show up at these town halls
which is fine.
Politicians of all stripes, you know, but specifically against showing up for the town halls being held by the more liberal members of Congress to make sure that their viewpoint is represented at these town halls. And,
I don't think that's what they're doing. They're showing up at the town hall simply to disrupt the town halls and to basically get on the news. I think that's been the end state of what's happening. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, on Friday, Rush Limbaugh goes and started, a lot of the conservative talking heads have been going berserk, okay? It's like their head exploded this year because there isn't a Republican president, okay? I mean, Rush Limbaugh called Obama on Friday Adolf Hitler, okay? Glenn Beck has been comparing all this stuff.
There were some similarities to Hitler, I believe. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he compared him to Hitler. Okay. The Jewish Anti-Defamation League this week, when Glenn Beck was, I think it was Glenn Beck who started calling all these Nazi policies, had to come out and say, you know, this guy has got some nerve to compare the Nazi atrocities with the stuff that's going on right now in this country, okay, that it really diminishes what happened in World War II, okay, you know, to compare it to this, okay. I mean, I know that probably most people, haven't really studied history that well, especially, you know, so they couldn't really know what the hell, you know, they're talking about. I'm sure all these terms keep being thrown around and, you know, they're thinking, yeah, Nazi, yeah. You know, they don't even know what the fuck they're talking about, to be quite honest, quite honest with you. You know, I will tell you this, but being a student of the interwar period, specifically, you know, World War One, World War Two, these entire tactics, you know what they remind me? They do remind me, the Republican tactics, a lot of what the tactics that Hitler was trying to use when he was not in power.
Now you're going to compare them to Hitler as?
Oh, absolutely, and I will tell you, and I will tell you why, I will tell you why. I'm not comparing him to Hitler as when he ran the country, not that. But the one thing is that the Nazi Party did when they were not in power, okay, when they only had, and you got to remember, the Nazi Party only had about 20% support in the country, even, and they did get control of the country. Basically, by browbeating the other groups into submission. You know, the Nazi Party had a group of people, the brown shirts that went around, that they riled them up for events, and they would go and they would go on rampages, and they were violent for the most part. The way that they would go and get their point across was by shouting louder than everybody else, and by shoving people in their face, and by just, you know, using tactics of violence, okay? Because they knew they weren't the majority, and they knew that if they tried to reason and they tried to talk to, nobody would listen to them. So therefore, they resorted to that. And to be quite honest with you, I'm looking at this stuff this week where there are town hall meetings where they're trying to have discussions about healthcare, and you see all these people that are just rushing into the halls to the point of, like, violence, okay? And I'm just like, that's what it really reminds me. I'm sorry, but, you know, if you look at it reeks of intimidation. It reeks of desperation. It reeks of, I don't know.
Well, you know, I want to be fair here, because I think there are certainly a few bad apples in some of these town halls who have taken it way too far, who have gotten violent, who have started intimidating people. There was one guy I saw a report earlier today that even brought a gun to one of these things. You know, so there are certainly people who've gone too far. However, I don't want to lose sight of the fact that having these organizations organize their supporters to come to these things, to demonstrate, to speak their mind, to hold up their posters, to ask hostile questions of the congressman. All of this stuff is perfectly within their rights, is normal, and they should be able to do it, and they should have, I feel, no compulsion against doing it either. It's, you know,
where is the line?
I'll tell you where the line, the line is. Once you start, these are town halls. You're supposed to have vigorous discussion. When you have a town hall that's nothing but your supporters, it's bullshit, and it's a photo op.
Have a town hall where there is no discussion but just a whole bunch of people yelling and chanting.
Yes. So,
you know,
so, right. So
you suck. You suck, liar. Whatever. That's not a discussion either.
No, I think you've just identified the line. The line is when you are disruptive to the point that the event cannot proceed. So there's a difference between coming up there and asking hostile questions and showing your signs and stuff than, you know, chanting and drowning out the conversation. At that point, you've passed over the line, and it would be perfectly legitimate to have a security person escort
remove
you
them.
Remove them, yes. Or whatever. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready. Frankenstein, then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
And we are back.
We're back.
If we were finished up that topic, I just want to mention one thing, and this is a 10-second comment. GarageBand came out with an update over the last week, and they've eliminated a couple of the annoying things that I've had to deal with every time we've recorded a podcast.
Such as,
there's a metronome a metronome. The thing that goes tick, 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 tick every second or whatever, that when they did the last update, they'd made it on by default. So every time I start up a new file and
wanted to
turn it off. Also, same thing. They'd had the default little metric at the bottom be, you know, bars and measures for like music rather than time. And so now the default is time again. And you can change it around, but the default is now more like what I would normally use here. So thank you. Although I'm noticing some other little bugs but it doesn't matter. Anyway, nothing that matters.
Well, we're recording.
We are recording so far. You know, of course, now that you've said that, it's going to blow up.
Okay, I'm knocking on wood. Okay.
Okay, so, blah, blah, blah. So,
blah, blah, blah.
So aside from the town halls themselves, I did want to mention as well, the healthcare debate itself. We've spoken a couple of times. I think a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, how is it? Do you think it's going to matter? Does it think it's going to do any good? I think I'm still sticking to my position that it's looking very much like what's going to come out of this process is going to be some bullshit compromise that doesn't do anything of substance. In terms of changing anything of the structure, maybe you'll get a couple more people insured, but you'll do it in a way that doesn't structurally change much of anything, and you'll still have gaps, you'll still have all kinds of bad things. You're going to have something that in the end is going to result in, the primary result being the insurance companies will make more money.
Oh, I really don't think that at all,
yeah.
By the way. No. I mean, there may be a whole bunch of things happening, but definitely that outcome I don't see in the cards.
I don't know.
The insurance companies winding up making more money? No. I definitely don't think so.
They are specifically structuring it in a way that, you know, even when adding more requirements, they will, in the end, be nice and profitable.
Well, the fact that they are profitable doesn't mean that I think that the insurance company
now. I tell you what. Right
I
now,
don't, why do you believe that? Right, let me ask a question. Right, why?
Well, because of the way that they are reacting to it themselves. The insurance company is not fighting this tooth and nail. The insurance industry, and I'll expand that to the healthcare industry in general. They are not fighting this tooth and nail. Instead, they are working in the ground. They are working with the lobbyists, specifically with the Blue Dog Democrats, in order to get various things written into these bills. And there, a lot of them are under the radar right now, but I think a lot of them are going to make it in there. And I tell you right now, you know...
But give me a real example. Tell me, I don't know. You're talking in generalities. Tell me what you think is that you've seen in the bills that is, you know, so, I don't know, something.
Okay, you're going to stump me here. I think that if there is a public plan, it won't have the right to separately negotiate prices.
Okay.
Okay. So I can't give you a detailed example. You caught me.
Okay. I will tell you
I'll tell you right now though. If you want a good bet, go buy yourself a health related mutual fund right now. It will be up and up significantly over the next 10 years.
I don't think that'll be the outcome. I got to tell you that given, the situation that's happened in healthcare over the last 15 years where I've seen even health companies that thought that they would be making a lot of money have been getting squeezed over the last 15 years. It hasn't resulted in any, you know, I think that one of the reasons why the insurance companies are going into this because they see that continuing as we are right now is leading to nowhere. I will give my little personal story this last couple of weeks. My wife wound up in the hospital a couple of weeks ago, suffering from vertigo. After talks with a couple of people, it was recommended that she needed to go to a specialist, an ear, nose, and throat doctor. We go to the ear, nose, and throat doctor. You know what the first thing they told me? Even though I supposedly have all these Cadillac benefits, it's not covered.
Okay. Yeah.
Not covered. And I'm like, you know, what the fuck? I'm like, yeah, and I supposedly have these great benefits. Okay. I don't think that the current situation as it is so great for anybody. I think that the insurance companies have come to the realization that in the last number of years, their profit margins have not been growing as they would have liked to, and many of them have had to proceed to do a number of restructurings, and figuring that the only way to make the system continue in some form is to make a major radical change. I don't think that the insurance companies are just in it because, you know, you're saying that the insurance companies are supporting it because they see it as they're going to make more money this way. And I think that they're coming from another different angle. I think they might be doing it for survival more than anything else.
Yeah, I will say this. I don't think they necessarily think that they would rather have reform than no reform, but I think they are making sure that anything that does happen happens in a way that is acceptable to them and where they will not sustain major damages. And I think, contrary to that,
but I will tell you that the biggest problem,
some of the existing industry has to be damaged in a major way to fix this.
But I will tell you this, that insurance companies are probably not the biggest culprit in the problems that we have right now with healthcare. Okay. So at least that's in my opinion.
Let me make sure I corrected myself earlier. I might want to make sure you got it. I'm talking the industry in general, not just insurance companies. So I'm including big pharma. I'm including, you know, all of the other research areas. You know, there's a lot of infrastructure there, not just the insurance companies.
Oh, okay. So you're adding all the rest of the healthcare industry.
Yes.
Well, I think that, you know, if you go through it, but you see, you're lumping them together, and they have a whole bunch of very different interests, okay, all lumped together. I will tell you that, you see, the role of an insurance company right now, especially with large corporations, is really of a manager. Not of an insurance company, to be quite honest with you. If you go, most large Fortune 500 companies don't buy insurance from them. They self-fund the payments. They pay out the directly from their pockets the expenses that are incurred by their employees. Okay, all the insurance companies do are act as a benefits administrator. Okay, for that. Okay, so. You know, if you take that's what's actually happening, you know, you tell me what the heck they benefit from doing that. Even when, you know, so their interest is certainly different. They're just saying, well, we're administrating whatever the hell plan there is out there, you know, whatever, you know, tell me what the hell they want to administrate, okay? And we'll administrate it that way, under whatever the hell guidelines we get. Now, usually, of course, they go out back to companies and they recommend, well, we can do this, we can do that. How do you cut costs? Well, they say, well, so you don't cover all the drugs that your employees want. We use a formulary. So in case they get recommended drug A, well, drug B does the same thing, but it's cheaper. So therefore, we'll switch them to drug B and we'll do this. And so they come up with all these recommendations. And that's what normally they do. You've got on the other side the pharmaceutical industry. Now, the pharmaceutical industry has totally different interests. As a matter of fact, the pharmaceutical interests in many times run very contravening to what the insurance industry wants. Because the pharmaceuticals want to sell the most expensive drug whenever they can, whenever they can sell it. Okay, at the highest price. And that runs totally contrary to what insurance companies do. Insurance companies go and they get recommended, you know, while the drug company wants you to take the most expensive drug, they say, forget it. I'm giving them the generic. It's the cheapest one. So they are in a tug of war, to be quite honest with you, in this environment. And then you go over to the doctors. The doctors, on another end, for example, are in a totally different end because they're also at battle with the insurance companies because
even within the doctors, there's a difference in interest between, say, general practitioners and specialists as well.
Exactly. So you've got so many competing interests there that, you know, when you talk about lumping them all together and it's like, oh, well, they're all interested in something. I don't know if they're interested, you know, they have a lot of competing interests. Okay.
I would agree with that.
And, you know, I don't know if, you know, if you can, if there is a consensus, there is no consensus that I've seen among the healthcare industry how to even change some of the problems that we've got. You know, I think that one of the proposals that I will tell you that I liked that the Blue Dogs came up with, which one of the things that they put up was to, if I remember, let me see if I can phrase this correctly, was to institute a board to review reimbursements and expenses amongst different regions, amongst per-person expenses, et cetera, and see how to investigate why those differences are and to see how we can balance those. Because if you study, for example, Medicare payments per person, say, in South Florida versus in some of the geography that I saw that, sometimes it's twice as much in one place or another. Actually, they found that the highest Medicare reimbursement per person in the U.S., or I think it was Medicaid or Medicare, was in McAllen, Texas. And then it was twice of all the surrounding towns. And you were like, why the hell are they spending twice per person as the other towns? And when you get down into it, you found out that it, you know, it was just some strange reasons. But the truth of the matter is that you could probably do a whole bunch of stuff in order to try to bring the industry into some coherent reimbursements and some coherent expenses if we actually went and did what the Blue Dogs actually recommended. I actually was quite encouraged by the fact that the Blue Dogs actually put that into the reform bill. But I don't know. You know, I will tell you something. I think that one of the problems that this entire bill's got that what's happening right now is two things. One, it's just so complicated, it's difficult to explain. Okay? And there are so many people with so many different interests.
And I have seen an argument recently that says that Obama's strategy to sort of try to do one big let's fix everything health care reform bill may have been fundamentally flawed, and that we might have been able to get a lot more done if you broke it up into a lot of different pieces, like you had one little thing on benefits and one little thing on this and one little thing
on one thing, for example, covering the uninsured,
right.
One thing on covering this and one thing on covering that, and maybe do it in steps. And I think that that's the big complexity. And everybody and the problem is that, you know, I'm not really even sure, to be quite honest with you, what the hell the Republicans are getting so pissed off of. You know, is it just that the Democrats are in power and they're pushing stuff through? I mean, really? I mean, it seems that sometimes it's just that's all it seems, because I'm like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm like, I have health insurance and I'm not happy with it. I really am not. Okay.
Right.
And I don't see these guys saying, you know. And I don't know why. I will tell you that the only people that I know that really are very happy with their health insurance are, for the most part, people who don't use it.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, fundamentally it's structured that if you have a lot of problems, you're going to see all of the deficiencies. You know,
yes.
If you go in not at all, or maybe once or twice a year when you
fantastic.
Yeah. But if you have any sort of significant problems, if you've got any sort of chronic problem, if you have a major injury, you're going to suddenly find out all the limitations of your coverage.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And it's like, you know, this problem with, for example, I just said with my wife's vertigo, for example, or all of a sudden I go to a fucking specialist. Aside from the fact I had to pay for the ER, you know, $100 out of pocket, I had to go and pay 100% out of pocket for the damn doctor visit because it's not covered. And, you know, and then I went to the – and by the way, the medicines were not covered either.
Indeed. Okay.
Yeah.
We actually need to take another break, so we will be back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
Everyone has a rhyme of the Ancient Mariner in them, by J.P. Dancing Bear. All the kids are chewing bubblegum and reciting there the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner to each other. It is like a scene for Cocteau's Orphe, where everyone is hanging out at the sidewalk cafe, only they are all worrying about their performance and rendition. Young men thrusting their arms into the sky with passion only actors can muster. They all think if they can hit it just right, there will be a big contract waiting for them. Many figures of figures dance in their heads. They imagine a Rolls Royce and a driver, but unlike the poets in Cocteau's movies, the radio was turned off for its distraction and noise. Someone complains about how hard it is to memorize an entire poem, yet recitals are given every minute. Time steps backward into a mirror. She smokes a cigarette on a long holder from under a veil. She studies them all, mouthing their words and swinging their arms, and decides she can wait a while. For Michela A. Gabriel.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And we're back. So,
pardon for anybody who's listened to me breathing. I think of my fucking microphone, the damn fucking, I don't know, whatchamacallit, sensitivity on it. It's a little bit tight because I'm certainly not trying to breathe too hard. Fucking thing. Yeah, it sounds like fucking Darth Vader's on the line, for Pete's sake. I apologize for the Darth Vader effects.
any last words on healthcare, or shall we move on?
We can move on.
So one other thing that's come up the last couple weeks, to go back to crazy Republicans for a while. And, you know, I've been reluctant to even mention this, but I think they've become comical over the last couple weeks, are the birthers.
Birthers.
Birthers. These are the people who are continuing to insist that Obama was not born in the United States and his birth certificate is a fraud.
Right.
There are a lot of people. You know, first of all, there are a couple. Yeah, there's a birthers now. There has been these truthers for a long time that, you know, 9/11 was an inside job conspiracy. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, there's the other ones that 9/11 was completely fake.
That's true. And I just don't know what to say about these people. But anyway, the birthers in particular lately have been gaining some prominence because there have been they're like actual prominent Republicans like in Congress and such who have said things that are, well, I'm not sure about the birth certificate and stuff like this, because there's enough of a percentage of self-identified Republicans who believe this crap that the elected officials are reluctant to say anything against them. There were some polls that came out in the last 2 weeks sometime. I don't have them in front of me. I'm going to make up some numbers and I'm going to be wrong, so anybody can correct me. But it was something like 30% of self-identified Republicans believed there was a problem with Obama's birth certificate, and there was a serious chance.
Fucking serious? 30%?
It was higher in some states too. You know, if you're on, try to Google it while we're talking about it. But
I'm sorry, but I'm not really all okay. I don't even want to give them a hit on their fucking website, you know.
Well, no, the polls are being done by independent organizations trying to find out how widespread. But anyway, the point is, like, and there's enough of these people out there that, you know, mainstream Republicans are afraid to say anything against them, and there's some elected Republicans who actually believe this crap as well, and. You know, and meanwhile, you know, okay, just for the record, the birth certificate was produced during the campaign. The Secretary of State of Hawaii made statements several times verifying that he had seen the original and it was available and it was legitimate and blah, blah, blah. there were independent organizations like factcheck.org that went to the Obama campaign office and actually held the original and looked at it and whatever. You know, so this has been verified. This has been verified quite a bit. And, you know, for that matter, the case that McCain wasn't eligible because he was born in the Panama Canal Zone was stronger than this case. And it was pretty weak also. But, you know, anyway, so what happened in the last couple of weeks, which was really amusing, is that a Kenyan birth certificate for Barack Obama surfaced.
Oh, okay.
And so the birthers were going nuts, saying, we found his real birth certificate. Uh-huh. And it said, you know, Republic of Kenya, blah, blah, blah. Here's, you know, had Obama's parents on it, had his birthday on it, had all this stuff, had a seal from Kenya, blah, blah, blah. So all of these right-wing birthers started going crazy about this thing and spreading it all over the place. Then somebody pointed out that this was a birth certificate from the Republic of Kenya, which did not yet exist at the time Obama was born. Because
slight little problem, huh?
Because it had not yet become independent, and you know, from the colonial period, and then a few days later. It was revealed that the person that this birth certificate was in fact, you know, of course, a Photoshop fake published by a left-wing blogger for the intent purpose of fooling the birthers into like going with this thing. And so, yeah, anyway, and it was quite amusing. Yeah, but the scariest part is, first of all, the percentages of people who believe this stuff. The fact that there are actual, like, Republicans in power who believe this stuff, too, not just the Yahoos. But also, when you look at it, there is a very strong regional bias. Apparently, if you live in the South, you are much, much more likely to believe this than anywhere else.
Oh, wow. I am so shocked by that. I am so shocked. Really? Oh, nah. Really? Wow. A whole bunch of racists in the South don't want a fucking white black president, so therefore they're making up stories about him not really being an American?
Oh, bingo! Bingo!
Wow!
Bingo.
What a shocker, you know?
I think you figured it out. This is not about people actually thinking he's not really an American. It's a convenient excuse to latch onto for people who are just so upset about Obama that they can't even comprehend that the country may have actually elected the man.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, we're going to have a lot of this stuff anyway. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? You know, the good thing is that in about 50 years, a lot of these people will be dead.
Oh, yeah. That's wonderful, I guess.
I don't know. I think attitude. I mean, let's face it. I think generationally attitudes are significantly different. I'm not saying that there's still racism in my generation or whatever. But I think that if you go through demographics, attitudes have significantly changed in each generation. So I don't know. You know, it's like
you're absolutely right. Although there's still some strong, like, certain regions of the country move faster than others.
Yes.
And a lot of this is, you know, demographic change as well, not just, you know, generational change, but I mean, you know, fundamentally, it's not going to be a very few number of years until, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants are a minority, or at least not a majority in a few years, and at a few more decades after that, they won't even be a plurality, you know, so...
Yeah, it'll be guys like me.
The world is changing.
You know, they're going to have to get used to it. We'll fucking tell them, you know. Well, what do you want me to tell you?
And not only guys like you through, you know, who have come from a Hispanic background, whatever. And then there's immigrants. But in addition to that, there's, you know, the good old-fashioned melting pot. There's mixing. You know,
sure.
There's plenty of people... And the numbers are growing every day who can't identify themselves as a single ethnic group because, you know, you look at their ancestry and they're completely mixed up. It's everything because the barriers are breaking down. I mean, if you talk, you know, 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it was a big scandal if, you know, people from different racial backgrounds got together and had kids. Now, it does depend on the part of the country, but in many parts of the country, it's like, who cares?
I must admit that I've dated white, black, Asian, you know, American, European. I've had no problems with any of the, you know.
Have you managed every continent?
Let's see, so... No Africa.
No Africa?
Well, I mean, no African-Americans, but that doesn't count.
No. Yeah. So,
Africa. I've got North America, South America, Europe, Asia.
I'd say you'd have to...
No Africa.
I'd say you'd have to go complete your collection, but you're married, so I won't.
I think my wife might not like that.
And, you know, the tricky one's always going to be Antarctica.
Are there any native-borns in Antarctica, really?
I believe there have been two or three babies born in Antarctica in the entire history of human habitation of Antarctica.
I would hope that if the girl better be hot. Otherwise, that might be one hell of a challenge if she's a third, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, I don't know. This could be problematic. But anyway, I don't think that my wife would respect the challenge. If I got divorced, I might take it back up again. Okay. I can never guarantee these things. What do you want me to tell you? I mean, you know, I could be a widower or a divorcee. If I can become a widower, I mean, definitely, you know, what the heck? I'll take up the challenge. I mean, what's the problem? I got to get back on the saddle. What am I going to do? I'm not advocating the death of my wife. I love my wife dearly, by the way. But I'm sure that after a period of mourning, and I know that I will be sad about it. You know, I'll figure out. You know, I gotta go do something. I mean, you know. So.
And it might as well be the rest of the continents.
Exactly. Okay. You know, that could be. That's you've given me a goal. You give me a goal.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
Enough about the birthers and Yvonne's continent challenge, which is different from a continents challenge, by the way.
Yes.
Anyway, Yvonne, your turn. You have a topic.
Ah, boy, the birthers. Let me see. Hold on one second. I thought I did have a topic here. Oh, gosh. Isn't it time for a break or something? I could get a topic here.
We can take an early break. We got a couple minutes left in this segment.
Ah, boy. Well, I have to pull...
I'll let you think. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LigonierRadio.com, The Valley.
And we're back, and Yvonne has found his cheat sheet list of topics.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I had it on my laptop, and then I moved it away for a second. But here's one thing. There's an article in the New York Times Magazine this weekend about the fact that Philadelphia could be the first city to be without a major newspaper. Okay, both newspapers right now in Philadelphia, which are owned by a group that bought them up, they're in bankruptcy. Okay, and it could be that you could have the first city without a major newspaper. Now, I'll give you the other flip side. First major city. I'll give you the other flip side the other week where Rupert Murdoch, who is now the owner of the Wall Street Journal, and the Wall Street Journal is probably one of the only successful pay news sites that there are on the internet, saying that he wanted to actually start charging for all content on their news website.
I was going to mention that in a minute.
And, you know, this brings a couple of very interesting things, you know, about that. I know, you know, many people that were writing on it were saying that, you know, they don't know if that model would really work because one of the things about the content in the Wall Street Journal, and I do believe they're right, is a very unique content that you get in the Wall Street Journal because of the depth of their financial information.
Well, it's fairly unique content that's also targeted at people with money to spend.
That's very true. Okay, yes. And so therefore, you know, the people who want that content have no qualms about paying $100 a year, you know, in order to subscribe, to $150 a year right now. Because $100 if you're a print subscriber is $150 a year or not. So, you know, they don't have a problem with that. I mean, you know, those people, I mean, I've gone, you know, I remember that once my subscription lasted for a couple of days and it took me a little while to re-up it, that I can't do without that content. Okay, I'm like, you know, and there are no really other good sources of it, okay? All the free sources that are out there just flat out suck, okay? So, you know, I don't know what you think about this. I mean,
I'll tell you what I think about it, too. First of all, even the Wall Street Journal can be free if you're willing to spend the time, you know, to walk to your local library or whatever. Now, of course, that's impractical for a lot of people. But again, what you're really paying for is not, even in the case of the Wall Street Journal, you're not paying for the content. You are paying for the ease of delivery of that content.
Totally. And timeliness.
And timeliness, right. You know, so, yeah, there are a number of ways you could get Wall Street Journal content free. But they're less convenient for the most part.
Now, they're less convenient and they're not as in-depth.
Well, yeah, okay, fine. Having said that, I think you have the if Murdoch decides to really put everything behind a paywall, he will find the same thing the New York Times tried when it put some of its content within the paywall, and everybody else has found, which is what happens is essentially instant internet death. You know, because you have far, far fewer people referring to your content, talking about your content, pointing people to your content, and the few people that do have to put like a quick little summary and say, oops, but you can't go read the whole thing unless you pay. The number of people who are willing to pay for that is going to be small enough that the end result is you're going to lose you're going to lose some advertising revenue, but you're not going to make up enough from the subscriptions to match the advertising revenue you lose. And in the end, it's you're going to end up losing cash on that anyway. And you know, fundamentally, too, there are a couple of different things. Of course, if you're an owner of a newspaper, your goal is to make money. Period. End of story. All of the rest of it, sort of the noble, like you know, getting the news for the people and all that. Okay, that's bullshit. You want to make money. You know, however, there is also
Want to break even.
Yes, you at least want to break even, and because then you could at least do it as a nonprofit. but I think the Christian Science Monitor is a nonprofit that has survived, although they had to drop most of their print publication and go online only. But anyway, you could go the direction of a much narrower kind of content that people are willing to pay for, but you will lose the influence and you will lose lots and lots of readers. Now, do you care about readers in the abstract outside of the money that they make you? Maybe you don't. But it is a very different kind of publication that you'd make. I mean, there are certainly publications out there that are niche publications that people are going to be willing to pay for because they can't get that content anywhere else. And maybe that works in the case of the Wall Street Journal and in-depth financial information. Maybe. Does it work for general entertainment news? No. Does it work for general politics news? No. Because there's enough of that out there and there's enough different sources that, and enough of them are free, that the only way that moving things behind a paywall like that could work is if you had a coordinated mass effort by every newspaper in the freaking country
right.
to do it at the same time.
Exactly. Yes, that's absolutely true.
And by the way, if they did that, there'd be antitrust concerns and there'd be problems there too.
There may be, but I don't. But I don't think so. I will tell you. I don't see why. I mean, let's face it. I mean, are all newspapers right now charge for their printed edition? I mean, what the heck? You know,
it would be the collaboration that would be required in order for them to all decide to do it at the same time that would be problematic.
Well, I think that, you know, there are many things – I will tell you that there are many times like before, like for example, that the fact that if a number of papers go and then others go at the same time, I mean it could happen, but I don't know. I really don't know. I mean I haven't seen any – regular paper right now I'll still figure out how to fucking make money right now with the current model.
Well, yeah, I mean the fundamental problem here is they have a model that is built on the economics of the old world newspaper industry, where you had to have this massive distribution, you had to have printing presses, you had to have all of this. So, you know, to run a major city newspaper, you needed to have a huge amount of infrastructure, and you needed to have a huge number of employees to manage not just the reporting, but everything around it.
The sale, the marketing, blah,
right.
blah, blah.
Whereas, you know, what can work now, given the existing internet economy, is a small, lean organization where you basically have your...
Just news gathering.
You basically have your writers, your news gatherers, and maybe... a very small number of support people, and that's
and you can outsource the sales of advertising on to say Google or somebody
exactly.
else that sells online ads.
You don't have to be doing that stuff. And I'll tell you, like for instance, that there's you know some of you know you mentioned Philadelphia's major newspaper may go away. Now I don't know
both.
About
all of them.
I don't know about the specifics of Philadelphia, but I'll tell you, like here in Seattle, you know. Yes, the Seattle Times is there. The Seattle Post-Intelligencer died and went online only. But, you know, for local Seattle political news and stuff like that, there are half a dozen good, small, independent online sources that report on all that stuff on a continuous basis. And do they do it in a straight old-fashioned newsy way? No, they do it from a very snarky, opinionated point of view. But if you read those sources, you'll find out the important things you need to find out about what's going on in Seattle, and you've got a number of also very small, you know, I forget the word they use for this, but concentrate on very small geographies, like individual neighborhoods. There are sources that are doing that kind of news as well. And these are the things that are unique here. There is no reason ever, again, for me to read my local newspaper to get national or international news.
I agree.
You know, there are going to be a few national and international sources, like maybe the New York Times focuses on international, and you know, but you only need one or two sources of that kind of news. You know, but these small local organizations can give you what you need for local level news. You don't need a huge ass Philadelphia Inquirer infrastructure for Philadelphia. You can have, you know, a half dozen independent, very small organizations that do independent news gathering for that city or even neighborhoods. And you kill all the infrastructure and overhead that things like major newspapers have with Yeah, you certainly don't need the printing presses. You don't need the sales staff. You don't need most of the management chain and editorial chain. You need, depending on scale, anywhere from two or three reporters to a few dozen reporters that are going out and doing their thing, and you collect some advertising, and you're done, and you keep it very, very lean, because even the biggest of these websites, economically, probably can't support a staff of more than 10 or 15, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. So I think that, there's still some reworking of that model to go. I will tell you that, I read the local newspapers, you just said this earlier, only for the news that are related to this area. I mean, I don't go and read the Miami Herald or, the Sun Sentinel around here in order to find out about the fucking international news. For the international news, I for the most part, I read the New York Times.
This is, of course, what people used to do, is their local newspaper was the one source of information
for
about
everything.
And that's just not the case anymore.
That's right. And I think that until they rethink that model, they're just backing themselves into further and further into a corner.
And they have to be lean. They have to be nimble. They have to concentrate on the things that they truly are the only ones that can provide. And even then, do I think a subscription model will work? Probably not, because let's say you did that on a local level. The barrier to entry for someone else to provide that same level of service is small enough. It's gonna, if you put up a $5 a month to get your local Miami news, but then somebody else does it for free and just as well, you're gonna go for the free one. And I think that's just gonna happen. I think the paywalls really are only gonna be on stuff that is really unique and has a really high barrier of entry for someone new to start doing it. Technical, really in-depth technical publications or things like that. And even there, the economics are wacky and it might end up being free too. But, and your financial news may be an area that's an exception because, some of that news you need access to get. And so there's stuff related to the name
And what they get is, for example, I will tell you that, for example, they get a lot of exclusive interviews, for example. It's like CEOs of companies that will not go and talk to blah, blah. The CEOs of the companies wound up talking to either the Wall Street Journal or the CNBC, for the most part. They are the two people who they will talk to, and they will give their opinions and their stuff. And that, and the economics reporting and the other stuff takes certain people of a certain skill in order to put that together. Also, when you go into their websites, for example, they have usually a lot of market data. They have a lot of information that's collected through, a real-time market data, which also costs money to get because the sources of that data don't give it out for free. Okay? There's only a few places where you can get it, and it's like, if you want – you can go to a free site that you get delayed data, or if you go to, you pay for the Wall Street Journal, you get real time data. And it's
that's changing in some places. They're real time NASDAQ quotes on Google now.
But they're paying for that.
I know they're paying.
The one thing is that they got to pay through the nose for it. And there's numerous websites, smaller ones that don't. Most small websites don't show it because it costs so much money to do it that they can't afford to. So you wind up with only – okay, so great. Google can do it because they're paying through the nose for it. But you've got to want to pay through the nose for that to give it away.
But here's the fundamental problem. One person out there who's willing to pay for it and then give it away for free then destroys the incentive for you to pay for that from anywhere else as a customer.
No, that's true. But the problem is that honestly, there aren't that many Googles out there willing to give away ridiculously valuable information for free.
And they may not forever,
And they may not forever because, at one point, how everything happens, all of a sudden when you start having so many projects and your profitability starts getting cut, what do you start doing? You start cutting shit like that, for example. So, I think that the model is evolving. The model's evolving. It's like, you know, I don't think that it's the end of the earth if a major city goes like you know, like Philadelphia without a paper. I think that it may be you know, at least they'll start pushing people into rethinking.
Yes, I think it would be healthy. I don't think it would be a bad thing at all. I think a lot of these newspapers need to die to let the new, better alternatives start to develop and start to really gain steam. Like, there's some out there, but, you know, they're sort of capped at a certain level as long as the big organizations are out there. And and part of that is sort of self-trapping. Like, a lot of these... Like I mentioned, you know, these Seattle local blogs, you know, a lot of them will still be like, oh, this was reported by the Seattle Times. Well, if the Seattle Times didn't exist, they'd do some of that reporting on their own or more of it.
Right.
And I think that some of these major newspapers dying is sort of the needed prerequisite for a real flourishing of a lot of these new media things coming into their own. I mean, and a lot of them are doing pretty well already, and they're certainly good to read. I don't know about their economics and how many of them are making money, but they're certainly like just as good or better to read than a lot of the mainstream sources. But the time that they'll really step up to the plate, I think, is once the old sources of information actually finally give up the ghost and die.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Anyway, we're pretty much out of time, so we'll wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for Curmudgeon's Corner. As usual, you know, listen again next week. Tell your friends. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts, we haven't had any for a bit, so email me in if you've got – email me in. Email me with comments.
Email me.
Send me stuff. Send me stuff. Comment on the blog, whatever, you know. Get the message to us, and we'll get back to you probably on the podcast. Anyway, that's it. Talk to you all next week. Goodbye.
Bye.